So the first question is, your work is on a range of topics in the field of political economy, ranging from comparative studies of different welfare systems and fiscal policy, redistributive policy, and among others. So what has kind of shaped your interest in these topics within political economy?
Well, I don't think I ever had a plan. I say, I'm going to work on this and then I'm going to work on that. I sort of followed what my interest, as my interests were developing. I always been interested in policy making, policy, politics, social issues. So I've always been interested in pushing a little bit the boundaries of economics in a variety of direction. But I don't think I ever made up a specific plan. For example, I really don't like write research proposals because I never know what I'm doing until I sort of done it. And when you write a research proposal, you have to say, well, in the next 3 years, I will do this and this and this. I'm not 100% sure until I am into the topic that how long it will stay on it. So I would say, apart from the general interest in social issues, political issues, everything else has come a little bit as the world was developing with my interest.
So maybe you were researching a topic thinking that you would approach it in one way, and then you found out about it and you decided to...
Well,
it just developed as it...
I don't know how to... Well, for example, I written maybe 25 years ago a paper on redistribution and growth with Danny Roderick. That got me sort of interested in thinking about redistribution. Then it sort of was a little bit dormant for a decade or so. And then I was talking with Ed Glaser, and we wrote this paper about the welfare state in the US and Europe. That led us to write a Brookings paper. Then we got into that, get us to write a book. And after reading after that book, we got really interested in a variety of different things. One is racial tension and redistribution, social mobility and redistribution. I'm writing a couple of papers on social mobility and redistribution that led me to think about race. Then I developed a bunch of papers on ethnic diversity. So I think you start from a paper on a particular topic, and then you discover that there are branches going in millions of directions, and then you sort of... Although another example is a few years ago, I was starting to think about how, a little bit like actually your father did some of that too, thinking about how culture affects economic behavior. That got me thinking, started to write a couple of papers with a co-author, Paolo Giuliano, and then from there we, again, another three developed. So I could think about three about redistribution, three about culture and related stuff, and then another three about fiscal policy, more sort of straight economics issue. So I would say, I would define this as three. You start off, you get into something, and then you start, oh, thank you. And one thing lead to the next, then you develop this.
Yeah, perfect. I read your research, your recent paper, Is Europe an Optimal Political Area? And in it you compare, so cultural distances using a comparison between the US and Europe. So obviously you can't compare the role of language, because the US has a common language and Europe has like 24 different languages. So what do you think the role of that would be in...
Well, I certainly... is certainly important. Clearly, it's. It's important in two ways. One is important in the obvious sense, which is much more complicated to communicate when people have 24 different languages rather than one. Even though English is becoming a little bit so everybody knows English, and there are countries like Switzerland who live perfectly well, small country with three different languages, and they work very well together. Even in the US, there's Spanish. So there's one aspect which is the sort of practical complication of having more language. But there's another one which is perhaps deeper, that languages are, there are different languages because this country have had different histories, different traditions, and so language is correlated with not so much cultural difference in terms of, as we discussed in the paper, cultural differences about views about this and that, but the feeling of nationalism and feeling mm-hmm. of, I mean, as we were discussing on that paper, I was saying, you know, if you think about Italy, there are people who are very different from them, each other in the north, in the south. Maybe there are extreme leftists, extreme rightists. Maybe an extreme leftist in the north of Italy is much more similar to an extreme leftist in France. And somebody from a populist party in Italy is much more similar to Le Pen. But then if there is soccer game between Italy and France, all the Italians are on one side, all the French are on the other. So that's also associated with language. I should also say that the paper that you're referring to, we don't look at the 27 EU countries, 16. We look at the core of 15 EU countries. So there is, in fact, there is another issue which is not touched in that paper, whether Europe is too big, namely whether this among these 27, I mean, if you had looked at these 27 countries, we may have found bigger cultural differences.
Yeah. So, for example, using like Switzerland as a model instead of the US, because it has, as you said, these three different languages, or is that too small?
Well, we didn't think of that. I mean, yes, Switzerland is probably too small to, I mean, we wanted to compare Europe to the US because for similar size, and also for data issue. I mean, you know, we don't have enough data about Switzerland, but I think it would have been a bit too small. And I'm not 100% sure that we had any data to test how important language per se is. I mean, there are no survey question or anything about how a French person would feel about having to deal with all administrative stuff in English or something. So it's certainly very important. It's important both for practical reasons and there's a symbol of a different nationalism, probably more than cultural difference.
Thank you. So now I have a few questions about that are more macro related. So Syed's and Piketty have argued that tax policy, in particular top marginal tax rates, could be a reason why there is rising income inequality in the US, or could explain part of it. So first of all, do you think that income inequality is an issue in Europe? And if so, do you think that tax policy and fiscal policy can be used to address it, or should that be left to target something else?
No, certainly in general, inequality is certainly something that fiscal policy should worry about. In fact, it's probably, fiscal policy is supposed to worry about two things, public good and redistribution. So certainly redistribution is one of the things that we need to think about. Incidentally, there are different types of redistribution between poor and rich that are alive today, and people who are alive today in future generation, and we are not doing a particularly good job at that because we are leaving to your generation a big debt and pension system. Not so much in Italy where there have been good pension reform, but in other countries there are pension systems who are problematic, not mentioned the big debt. So certainly redistribution is a key issue for fiscal policy, no question about it. Now, what you want to do about inequality and which policy you want to follow, that there may be some disagreement, but I don't think any serious economist would disagree that fiscal policy has to be used for redistribution. How much and how, we may disagree, but and see how we would not agency would how would not use fiscal policy. I mean, you have to use fiscal policy.
Yeah. So do you think that cutting the top marginal or increasing top marginal tax rates can affect pre-tax incomes in Europe?
Well, I think different countries in Europe have very different tax systems and very different way. There could be different way of going about it. There are some countries that have a wealth tax, some countries that don't, some countries that have a very progressive income tax system, some countries that rely more on consumption taxes. So I think it's very difficult to make broad statement about every country in Europe. A general principle about fiscal policy is that rather than increasing rates, you want to increase the base. So you don't want rich people to be able to avoid taxes by deducting or making all sorts of deduction. So you want typically this open the base, but don't have a very high tax rate. But again, here it depends from country to country. The other issue that Piketty has answered a lot is that he's argued that there is a lot of wealth inequality. It's a debate about this wealth inequality coming from accumulated income inequality, or there is something about wealth. I mean, you could have a very, very low income, but then have a huge wealth and be really a lot of inequality about wealth, but not so much about income. So what do you do about that? How you tax wealth and so on? So a very complicated issue. I don't think that there is a general prescription for every country in Europe.
In Europe, yeah. So in terms, going back to the US, now that the recovery from the Great Recession seems to be more robust, what do you think should be the next moves in monetary policy from the Fed?
Well, I very much hope that we will return to the quote-unquote normal state of affairs, that the Fed will continue to gradually raise interest rates, that we will move away from the zero lower bound situation. Mm-hmm. Inflation is picking up, wages will pick up, so hopefully we will return to we'll continue in this direction of returning to 2 or 3% inflation, interest rate, nominal interest rate or 3 or 4, and real interest rate or 1 or whatever, and return to a more normal state of affairs. I think we are moving in that direction, and luckily we'll get there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have one final question. So how does your research inform a prediction about the future of the EU after Brexit, or the results of the French election and the general anti-EU sentiments?
Well, the French election went well. I mean, this guy Macron will win, 99% he will win. The question is a little bit what kind of a government can he form, because there are a lot of division, but the risk of Le Pen seemed to have been avoided. It would have been problematic if somebody less popular was facing Le Pen in the second round, but I think with him they are pretty safe that Le Pen is going to lose. More generally, I think that going back to my paper, I think that paper suggests that Europeans, in terms of fundamental values, are not that different from each other. But I think there are two problems. One is nationalism. People don't want to give up their national government prerogative to the European Union. And we have the immigration crisis is a big issue. And then the process of European integration has taken too much of a elite, so the word is elite, deciding where we want to form Europe. And I think they underestimated the fact that before making further step towards integration, you need to create popular support for it. So I think there has been a period in which the elite were progressing towards integration and the masses were sort of not following. So I think there'd been some disconnect between elite and masses that then I think was aggravated by the crisis. And now I think there is a need of making Europeans more convinced that we need a European Union. I think it's the next step for Europe. I think is to bring back popular support, and maybe start thinking about the 27 countries are too many, and we need to have a core moving faster and keeping the other countries with free trade and everything. But perhaps it's too difficult to put together 27 countries.
Yeah. So you think the results of your paper would be kind of similar, even if we extended the timeline beyond 2009?
I suspect our result, if we had the data, our result would show that there is a increase in nationalism, increase in the great Greeks and Germans not liking each other more. Increase in harsh views about each other. For example, there are data about how much people of a different country trust each other, which we have not used, but I'm sure that if these data were available, and they're not, but if they were available for now, they would show that a decrease in trust across countries because of the result of the crisis. I don't think we would see that basic cultural views have changed a lot. I don't think that we would see that, say, German views about gender roles has changed relative to Greece. So I don't think that fundamental cultural similarity probably stayed the same, but there's been an increase in reduction in mutual trust, probably increase in nationalism and the views that we don't have question about that, but if there were a question about the Northern European, do you think the Southern European are lazy, or the Southern European said, do you think that the Germans are too aggressive or something? I'm sure those kind of questions would have shown divergence, but I don't think there would be significant divergence. I don't know, religiosity that sort of.
Perhaps in the future with the.
Well, with one thing that we find is that some of these fundamental values about gender roles and so on, the difference between countries have not increased over time that much, but not because the cultural value remained stable, but they moved, but sort of in a parallel way. So, generally speaking, Europe has become more secular. Gender roles and views about gender roles have become more egalitarian, but sort of all countries move more or less at the same speed. In fact, the Northern European countries is slightly faster, so the difference between Northern Europe and Southern Europe is slightly increased. Views about abortion or divorce or this kind of thing. So I think the Nordic countries are becoming more Nordic, and the Southern European countries has become less Southern, but a bit
slower
pace. So the difference is slightly increased.
Okay. So are you waiting for the next wave, or is this an ongoing?
Yeah, well, this is another example of a bug that may become a tree, in the sense that, first of all, I've been interested in Europe for a while, so that's another. But that, from that paper, we realized that this paper made the point, which we were a bit surprised actually, that there's been a lot of economic convergence, and culturally, Europeans are more similar to each other than Americans. Then what is the problem from Europe? And we have some point in the conclusion, but well, it's nationalism, language, and so on. So I think we want to go a little bit deeper into that, the issue of where these nationalists come from, and why is it increasing? Why? What are the consequences? So we haven't done anything yet, but I think we have. I think in some sense this paper ended with a question mark. I mean, if Europeans are so similar, not only they are so similar, but say Northern Europe, Northern Italia, they may be more similar to Southern Germans than they are to Southern Italian, and Southern Italian may be more similar to Portuguese than they are to Northern Italia. So if there is this regional differences, why can't they I mean, to put it differently, if Italy or France or Spain, for that matter, managed to work reasonably well as single country with so much difference between each other, why couldn't Europe as well? So I think this paper ended with a lot of question marks. When you have a question mark, you may want to go deeper.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
So what are you going to do with this? Are you going to write a paper? You're going to write a report or something?
Yeah, a profile. And I will obviously send it to you if you're interested in it.
Sure, please do. And for which class is
that? So I'm taking economic journalism class. So we did two academic papers, two books, and two lectures.
You have to write a report on a book?
Yeah. Well, yeah, the book report has been on Stephen Radelet, The Great Surge.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm currently reading Alan Blinder, After the Music Stopped, which is about the financial crisis.
Is it good?
So far, I just started it, but so far he's kind of describing like the bubble, and I kind of knew about that already, but I'm curious to see what he says next. And then we did, one of the papers was actually by Roland Fryer.
The one on the police, yeah.
And then we also looked at some research by Saez.
And then you need to write the profile on something.
Well, no. The profile is the final assignment, and it's on One Economist.
Okay.
The previous were kind of articles based on the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, on Roland Fryer's paper, I wrote the article trying to explain his results to a non-economics audience, and that's kind of the point for most of the assignments. Yeah.
Good.